Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed to 2025.
Hey, it's January 1st.
Yeah, at least we're recording on the 1st. Yeah, the 2nd for you guys. Yeah. Happy New Year's.
Yeah, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's to you.
We made it.
How were your holidays?
Too long.
Okay, wow.
I couldn't stand to be without you guys. That was corny. But no, I actually do feel like my Christmas holiday was too long. It just... At some point, I wanted to just get back to my schedule. I love my family. I love going and doing things. It was time to get back to work.
Yeah, capitalism's favorite little warrior. No, I'm kidding. I had a pretty good time as well. It was fun. I want to update the pod on something that we discussed last time as well, before we get into all of the news, which is when we were talking about our favorite movies of 2024, I said at the time that I hadn't gotten to see Sonic 3, which I knew would be my favorite movie of 2024. However, there's been a new development, which is that there's a movie that has maybe just contested it for my favorite movie of 2024 that I also saw over the Christmas break.
Uh-oh.
I went with my mom to go and see Wicked, which you guys might know is kind of the Wizard of Oz, like, sort of the musical thing. Yeah, Ariana Grande. And I, you know, went into it thinking like, oh, this will be kind of like a movie that my mom will like. It's a musical. It's kind of fun. It's about these two girls. It's actually a really good movie, though. Like, as it happens, it's a really good movie. The songs are good. I thought that the story and the acting and everything was just great. And so I might have liked it more than Sonic 3.
That's crazy, because Ariana Grande isn't even in Smash.
Yeah, I know. Like that's the specific thing that
1v1 me money match Sonic versus Ariana Grande.
Yeah, but I had a fun time with that movie. I would strongly recommend, you know, if you haven't seen it, maybe consider going to see it or watch it on streaming, since it's apparently like out on streaming this week or something.
Now, my favorite movie, that is crazy how fast things are making it to streaming.
Yeah,
but my favorite movie for 2024 did not change, but I did see a movie that surprised me. Was I saw Mufasa. Because I was bored. And
yeah, everybody has like all these awful things to say about Mufasa because, you know, they think it's like a soulless remake. Is that true, false? How
do you feel? It's definitely not soulless. You know, it does it retread Lion King ground, and purposefully so? Most definitely. They want you to be reminded of the Lion King as much as humanly possible. But I did like the way they used the lore and mythos of the Lion King and tell us a new story that we hadn't heard before. Yeah. I never thought I'd use the word lore with The Lion King, but technically there were multiple movies, and I believe there's like a book and a TV series at one point. And they kind of used all of that in this movie to tell you a story about, well, Mufasa, Simba's dad. And I was like, yo, this was actually not bad. I didn't think I was going to like it, because I typically skip all that live action nonsense. But this is technically not live action because it's all really just CGI animals with some real animals mixed in.
Yeah, I always felt like that was the part about it that kind of turned me off from it, was just like watching CG animals talk and stuff. But maybe it's not so bad after you just sit down and it's happening. Anyway, though, ones in chat, can't forget that.
Premier gang, rise up.
Will you be the first one in 2025?
There can only be one.
Yeah, there can be only one. And there's only one allowed in a deck.
That's right.
There can be only one, is limited to one.
It's a Highlander format, I'm sorry.
So, yeah. But hopefully you guys all had great holidays. Hopefully you are looking forward to an exciting new year. We certainly are. This was going to be like the week that I changed up a few things in the pod. We wanted to do some like tech upgrades and kind of change the set a little bit. None of that actually happened because the holidays are crazy. And
we were going to green screen Paul out. Like, he's going to wear a green screen shirt and pants and just be a head.
Yeah, it was going to be a floating head. It was going to be a little bit. But yeah, ones in chat, positive reviews, thumbs ups, likes on the video. Also, a little announcement. We did pass our 100 channel members goal last year, guys. We have 106 channel members.
Which we blew right through that. I guess some people were taking their like Christmas stocking money and they just...
Yeah, I just decided to give us a little small donation. We certainly appreciate that.
Most definitely.
Also, I have a review for us. This came to us from This Is Verifier, which I think means like verifier. But this review is kind of weird. I don't know if it's supposed to be a song.
Well, you gotta sing it. Just try and sing it and see what happens.
Okay. A B D E F G. Pod of Greed is very cool. They cover up the games weekly and also read some reviews. Now I'm writing the song now while I'm listening them talk now. Thank you for the 5-star review.
I'm sorry, Paul, could not do your song justice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was a song, but I saw like the A, B, D, and then they skipped like C. So it's like E, F, G. We appreciate any positive reviews, whatever platform that you listen to. It really means a lot.
And if you say them in song, Paul will do his best to sing.
You got to read the next one, I think.
I don't know about that. Because yeah. I feel like just you saying that will make someone write something crazy.
Well, anywho, it's been...
they're going to start putting copy pastas in the reviews.
Yeah, just little songs for us to read. I mean, I'll read a little bit as long as it's in tandem with Alec. We'll do a little duet.
Whoa, no. Who said that?
There's a lot of news that we missed over the last couple of weeks because, you know, we did our little awards thing for last week's podcast. So there are some Yu-Gi-Oh! Things that we did not get to cover.
And then that adding that to the new Yu-Gi-Oh! Things that we didn't get to cover, we got quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of things to go over. So where to start?
Cards. Cards are typically the safe bet.
Yes, although I think that there is a bigger announcement than cards, or at least related to cards, which is that they confirmed at Jump Festa that they are going to be doing that Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of animated shorts thing, the Chronicles. It's happening. What do you have to say for yourself, mister? They're not going to announce an anime.
So I saw this announcement and I was very upset because you guys who watch every pod episode, you know how strongly I made the case that we were not going to hear anything about Yu-Gi-Oh! Animation updates. I doubled down on that. And in less than a week, I had to eat my words.
Now, I will say this, as news goes, it's actually really cool because we got confirmation that we're going to be getting shorts of some kind that cover lore stories based on the Chronicles sort of anime snippets they'd shown. They're going to start in in April of this year.
Which is sooner than I would have expected.
And we're going to get new episodes every month. So they're going to be starting with Branded and Sky Striker.
That's going to be fire. I wonder if there'll be multiple shorts or if there'll be one short for each archetype.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure about. They didn't really give any more details than that. They didn't even really give like a trailer. It's just like an image. It's just saying like this is going to happen.
I feel like with Sky Striker, you could get away with showing us one like story, one conflict, and we'll be satisfied. But we know the Branded story has so many parts. It feels like there's no one part of the Branded story they can show us, and we'll feel like satisfied, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing is I do wonder, like I wouldn't want just like, okay, here's like a little 5-minute Branded short, because I feel like there's so much there that 5 minutes couldn't possibly do it justice.
Because they could show us the climax, you know, the final battle of the Branded story. And I think we'd still kind of wish, well, I would have liked to see the Spriggan monsters or the what were the bird people called? The winged beast archetype. The Tribe Brigade.
Yeah.
I would like to see
like each one to get everything, their own short.
But they can't put that all in one. Yeah. They might try, but you kind of can't.
I'm actually curious if they're going to be voice acted as well. Like, are they going to, because I mean, it's very likely that if they are voice acted, it would be like Japanese, you know, with subs. With
subtitles,
yeah. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it does make you kind of wonder like, man, this could be really cool if actually it was dubbed. Because you remember Pokemon Generations, like, yeah. They dubbed those. I thought that was cool.
But I know some of the Pokemon short series, because they've done quite a few different like short series for the Pokemon franchise. But I do know some of them weren't voiced at all, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Most could certainly get away with it.
Most were with Pokemon. I know that they did Generations, Paldean Winds was voiced. I don't remember if Origins was voiced.
Like, it might have something to do with the licensing for all this nonsense, because as we all know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Players and fans, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise has so many hands in that one pot,
I don't think that, like, for me, I just think that if they don't voice it, it'll just be for budgetary reasons.
Oh, I figured that if they voice it, maybe that means it's now under someone else's control.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Can be a little weird about that sort of thing. All I know is, like, I look forward to this. I think that this is a good way to engage people who, you know, like the card game, because that is is, or at least has become, a very different crowd than just people who like the animes. That said, though, we didn't really get an announcement of a new anime, which is something that people wanted. And
at least that part happening. Of my hard stance is still like sound.
Yeah, no new anime. They did announce that they're going to be doing a GX remaster,
which I'm super excited for, unless it's one of those really weak remasters where they just use AI to get it to 60 FPS and call it a day.
So it sounds like it's going to be like a 4K upscale and or like maybe a 1080p upscale or something, which means they'll probably use sort of an AI algorithm. And the thing is,
I want them to redraw the entire series.
Yeah. And revoice it and give us season 4.
Exactly. Dubbed. I want all of it.
The thing is, I found out actually that apparently they did this with Duel Monsters a few years ago on Blu-ray. And I didn't really, like, I remember maybe briefly hearing this headline in like.
That must have been before we were podding, because we would have talked about
it. Yeah, it was before we were podding. It was like 2020 or something, okay. Like 2021 maybe. And it was not like a great remaster job. Like, it was just sort of upscaled to 1080p and then they cropped it in or something. Like, it's just not very. Yeah, it wasn't anything special. And so I'm hoping that they'll maybe do more with this GX one, but the precedent at least does not inspire a lot of
confidence. I'll cross my fingers. Though, the biggest GX thing that I'm getting this year is Supreme Darkness. So I guess I'll be fine one way or another.
Yeah, a lot of Supreme Darkness stuff. They did do a live stream for Supreme Darkness. Yes. That's something that we weren't able to talk about. They revealed some rarities for some of the cards. You know.
The good cards are high rarity, the bad cards are not.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's just, it, yeah, it's what you expect. Like, I see Abao Aku, the Lightless Shadow is a secret.
Ooh, the Fiend Link monster.
The new Molcharmy Meowless, or Meowls.
That's an Ultra Rare, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's.
Or is it secret?
It looks like this is secret, I think. Although I thought maybe, I heard it was Ultra today. I don't know.
Who knows?
Either way, Supreme Darkness, it's going to be out like here in a few weeks, so I guess we'll get all the more details that we want.
I can't wait. I've waited way too long for this set.
It does feel like it's been a bit of a long wait.
It does. I mean, our last major Yu-Gi-Oh! Set was in October.
Yeah, they showed off this Mitsurugi Ritual Reptile archetype. And kind of got me a little bit curious. Like, I could see myself maybe playing this.
Yeah, you're going to mix it with the OG daddies?
Yeah, I think that's going to how you have to do it. I'm talking about Ogdoadic, by the way, for anybody who's like very confused.
That's an old APS joke that I forget where it came from.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Somebody somewhere was mispronouncing the Ogdoadic thing, and we got OG Daddy instead of Ogdoadic.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be a cool set, Supreme Darkness. Interesting that they did a live stream as early as they did. Like, this is like over a month before the set released, which means that maybe they're finally trying to kind of get ahead of like these leaks that keep happening with these cards, you know? It's like,
I mean, maybe, you know, maybe you don't ship it before you announce it. That's all I'm saying. It always felt weird to me that the product is in shops' hands already before they even officially announce all the things that are in it. Feels like you're just asking for leaks.
Yeah, but can make the spoilers happen a lot.
My assumption is that's just how like card game industry works in the States, where you're just supposed to have it shipped to sellers like very early for some reason.
Couple of Mega House announcements.
That's the figure.
The people, Artworks, right? Monsters line. They're doing a Mega House Silent Magician.
All right, they ain't have to do it like that.
Yeah, she's certainly.
That's a lot of leg.
Yeah, a lot of leg. You can even sort of see the.
I am offended by this rendition of the Silent Magician. I mean, it's going to be such a pain to find room on my shelf for this horrible, horrible take on this monster.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just so disgusted.
Truly awful. There's also Dark Magician Girl, the Dragon Knight.
I didn't expect the Dragon Knight.
There's no Tamiya version yet. Yeah, I guess there's not. I guess it's just her.
See, now, if Tamiya was a part of it, it would have been a for sure buy for me. But we've had Dark Magician Girl figures. If it's just her in the armor, I'm a little disappointed. I can't lie.
It's like an alt outfit, though. A lot of people are into that. So
maybe I can like 3D print a Tamias and I'll put her on the Tamias and now I'll be satisfied.
Yeah, they also have announced, this is sort of OCG news, but I thought it was just interesting and relevant enough.
We don't deal in leaks, Paul.
So you know the Tactical Tri-Decks?
Yes.
They are supporting each of them with two new Eldritch cards, two new Live Twin cards, and two new Cyber Dragon cards. I'm not going to go over like the individual effects.
Like actual in archetype?
Not... Yeah, like in archetype cards.
Oh.
It's like Angel Kaido, or Angel Kaido of the Golden Land.
Let me see that.
It's this new fusion. It just takes Eldritch, the Golden Lord, and a zombie monster. But here's the cool part. You can distribute a light zombie while you have Eldritch on your field or in your grave to summon it instead. So it's kind of like Thunder Dragon Colossus in that way.
I do like how easy it is to summon.
Now, the weird part is its effect is just like if it's sent from field to grave, you can summon an Eldritch monster from your deck, extra deck, or grave. So it's like you're supposed to just make him and then send him and then use that
to get the Mad Golden
Lord. To summon the big like Lord guy.
Because he's good. The Mad Golden Lord's good. He's just awkward to get on board because of the fusion spell.
And they also got Eld Elixir of the Exalted Golden Land. This cool continuous trap. And like each of them got two cards, which I think they're supposed to kind of be, it's like a way of, I guess, rewarding people who bought those tactical tri-decks with like, hey, here's some more stuff to upgrade your tactical tri-deck, right?
So, but why aren't you jumping up and down in joy for new Cyber Dragon support? I thought this was what
you wanted. I am. I'm excited about it. There's Cyber Jormungandr.
Oh, God. I hate that. Neat. I hate Paul and Jormungandr in the same sentence.
And then Cyberdark Worm. So this one looks
kind I of, hate Paul and Worm in the same sentence.
Cyberdarky.
Paul, they made these cards for you.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And I'm going to play them.
Well, but wait, did I hear Cyber Dark?
Yeah, so there's one is a Cyber Dragon and one's a Cyber Dark.
Ha, you got to play a Cyber Dark.
Ooh, I do not like playing Cyber Darks. I've played so much of that deck.
Yeah, guys, for context, Paul has played the Cyber Dark structure deck so many times on this channel.
Yeah, we've just done every time there's like a random structured thing or whatever, I always end up with that stupid
deck. And the best part is, at no point has he ever liked Cyber Darks.
Yeah, I've always loved Cyber Dragons. Not a Cyber Dark fan. Just not. Some alternate arts for Sky Striker Ace Hayate.
Hey, Sky Striker players, they're going to pay.
Yeah.
But how's that going to come out? Like, what set is that?
So this is in the OCG. It's like a quarter century art collection. I think it's like something that they're doing. So for us, who knows? It'll be thrown into Battles of Legend, maybe.
Wait, don't we have one more quarter century set coming out?
Yeah, so there's going to be quarter centuries in Supreme Darkness and Alliance Insight, next two mainline sets. But then also Quarter Century Stampede, which is the sequel to Quarter Century Bonanza, is going to be the last set or whatever of the 25th anniversary. And we finally will be done with these QCR cards. Hopefully, maybe. I'm
so curious what they're going to put in Stampede. Because, well, I feel like they gave us everything. Like, to give us more would be bleeding into, like, the kind of reprint schedule that the game is on.
Yeah, I don't really know that there's like, because, you know, with Quarter Century Bonanza, there was like, you know, about 80 cards in the set and this 200 card nostalgia pool. And I don't know that there's like another 80 cards and like 200 nostalgic cards that need reprints, but like someone can probably name them off.
I feel like they could definitely fill in nostalgic cards fairly easily. The hard part for me would be just the reprints that you give us because, I mean, the only things that would need reprints right now are kind of very current decks and cards. Things that they wouldn't want to reprint yet.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, also,
Ryze will get a reprint in there.
For the Chronicles, by the way, they have these storyboards that they released. I forgot to mention this.
Storyboards?
So it's just kind of these, it's not really storyboards, it's these synopses of the stories. So, a story of girls piloting advanced weaponry to wish for peace. To resist a powerful military state, a highly advanced weapon, the Sky Striker system, was developed. The girl entrusted with controlling this weapon, Rey, becomes the key to protecting her country's people, throwing herself into brutal battlefields. And then another Sky Striker ace. On the battlefield, where she demonstrates the prowess of taking down 1,000 enemies, Rey suddenly encounters a girl wielding the same Sky Striker system as herself. This girl, Rose, developed by the enemy nation as a new Sky Striker ace, swings her merciless blade without hesitation, leaving Rey conflicted. As their blades cross countless times, what future awaits these two girls? So that's already a little bit of like context, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to get a battle scene between Rose and Rey. I mean, that's something that I think the entire Yu-Gi-Oh! Community would appreciate seeing.
And then here's the one for Dogmatica, or The White Story. A story of a boy and a girl guided by fate. Under the rule of the theocracy Dogmatica, Faith dictates everything. One day, a hole opens in the heavens and a dragon appears. Struck down by the power of the Holy Maiden of Dogmatica, Fleur-de-Lis, the fallen dragon crashes to the ground. At the crash site, what was thought to be a dragon turns out to be a boy, injured and unconscious. At the height of the battle, another saintess, Ecclesia, takes pity on the boy and decides to protect him. However, her actions to shield the boy lead to her defying the teachings of Dogmatica, and she's branded a heretic. The two are then saved by the Tri-Brigade, an organization opposing Dogmatica. With their help, the boy, now revealed to be Albaz, and Ecclesia escape the battlefield, leaving Dogmatica behind. From here, the tale of these two begins.
Okay, so they're going to just cover that initial branded story with Dogmatica and Tri-Brigade.
At least, that sounds like that's maybe what the first episode will be.
You think they'll do multiple episodes? That was my question earlier.
I'm really not sure.
It would be cool if they did multiple episodes for each archetype, because I think like fans of these archetypes would really dig their teeth into multiple looks at their favorite archetype.
Yeah. See, I see this thing that says in Supreme Darkness that Molcharmi Meowlis is an ultra, so maybe I'm wrong about this.
Maybe that's multiple rarities and that Konami's finally listening to us.
Yeah, that could be it.
Ultra and secret. Yay, such a big difference.
Anyway, I guess that's like the Yu-Gi-Oh! News. I mean, I saw there's like a new spell that's kind of another like field clearing thing.
That's the Japanese release. That's Japanese.
Yeah, it's like an Alliance Insight.
We don't talk about those.
Yeah, so one interesting thing about it, though, is that... we'll talk about it just briefly because I know people will want to hear some opinions.
I'm going to draw the line over here for right now.
Gordian Schneider. Its activation and effect cannot be negated. At the start of your main phase, target any number of cards in the field, face-up cards, banish a card from your hand, or six from your extra deck for every target, face down, then return those targets to the hand. So kind of a cool way to like clear the board.
Six for every target from your extra deck?
Well, you can do a combination. So like I could target two of your cards and then banish six cards from my extra deck and one card from my hand. Or like two cards from my hand or 12 cards from my extra deck.
Huh.
So there's sort of some options there. But what's more interesting about this to me actually is that this sword that's like here or whatever, this kind of weapon.
Yeah.
Some people think that this is like Original Sinful Spoils. Not Original Sinful Spoils, but Sinful Spoils of Subversion. If you remember when that came out.
Yeah.
Where like it was just this one-off spell that didn't have to do the archetype yet.
But then it becomes an archetype.
Yeah.
So that sword does look stylized, right?
It looks like it belongs to some monster.
Like a super robot or something.
And that's actually all the Yu-Gi-Oh! News. I think thanks to the holidays, there wasn't as much to catch up on as I would have maybe feared.
I feel like we still cover plenty.
Yeah, I will say, though, just on my own personal Yu-Gi-Oh! Life, I was playing the Duelist Cup towards the end of last year, and I was having a lot of fun. I really was enjoying myself. I played in the first and the second stages of the Duelist Cup.
Okay, how'd that go?
It was fun. I streamed most of it on Team APS. People were tuning in. We were having a good time. And I don't know. I just think they did a really good job with, like, the music and stuff this time. Like, I know not that many people, it's like some people don't really care about that sort of stuff, but I like the music. The composer, I found out, actually, it's Yasunori Nishiki, and he helped with the music in Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth, which I thought was really cool. You can hear the similarities in the songs, but also Granblue Fantasy, the animation, and Octopath Traveler. So
I remember Octopath Traveler. That was a... It was always recommended to me on the Switch, but I never did it because I only played Pokemon games on Switch.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might actually try it out just because I like his music so much. So shout out to you, Nishiki-san.
So
your music is amazing.
Now that you have done 2 days of Duelist Cup, is the system as bad and flawed as people say?
Oh, I mean, I think like if you're not playing to go to Worlds, which I wasn't, I was not like doing the whole like, okay, I got to get to top three or whatever. I just was playing just as a personal, well, fun personal challenge. I had a good time. I got into the duels. I didn't really feel like it was too toxic for me, but I guess like it just depends. Like if you're going for like that top three spot, if you're trying to get that world strip, yeah, that sounds obscene. I heard there was some controversy with one guy who like got, he was in like the top three, but then like, when the results were counted, it was showing him as like fourth, and he was upset because the game had disconnected him during his last, like just something Dang. Like that. I don't know what exactly was going on with that, but I'm glad that I wasn't, you know, that deep into it where, you know,
you weren't a try hard, not like the rest of those guys.
Yeah, I wasn't sweating, I could say. Although, no, I did enjoy my duels. It was challenging. It was fun. A lot of Tenpai. Oh, I guess that reminds me, they did release a ban list, a new Master Duel ban list. I should probably.
Oh, yeah. It is a Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is actually a few days ago for a change.
It could be any day for Master Duel. They don't care.
Well, at least in this case, they do typically release these ban lists like after Duelist Cups or when you get the more major ones. And the really random ones just come in any time.
Yeah, and it could happen. And they're like whenever. Smaller. But I guess this one must be a targeted list, right?
Yeah, a little more targeted. It really only targeted Tenpai and then just brought some cards back. So they limited Tenpai Dragon Chundra and they limited Sangin Summoning. So Sangin Summoning was already at 2 and now it's at 1. That's that field spell. And yep. Then Chundra is the one that like summons one from deck. So it's
couldn't 1. Tell you what it looks like.
Yeah, they all kind of look unremarkable, Tenpai Dragons. And they moved a few cards to 3. Trickstar Reincarnation, White Dragon Wyverburster, Sky Striker, Mecha Hornet Drones, Quick Launch, Herald of Orange Light, and Fluanderies and Empin. These are all kind of just older cards, so they're not probably going to make like a huge dent. But
there's someone that's going to be crying tears of blood because they're playing against Flu and they have all their cards.
Yeah, so that's kind of the Master Duel news. Nothing too crazy. I know they're doing like the 2025 event. There's like a little deal you can buy with your gems. There's a little dual trial mode where like both players have 2025 life points. It's kind of a fun little thing. They do that last year as well. Both people went.
Some archetypes will take you out the game if you only have 2025 life points. Honestly,
everybody's just playing like Ukazi and stuff.
Burn you down.
Boom, boom, boom. Like you can kill people. It's not very fun for that reason. But anyway, yeah, that's the Yu-Gi-Oh news. I don't think I missed anything major. People will let me know if I did, though.
Just let us know in the comments. We make mistakes.
All right. Now we kick it off to you for the card games.
So while I don't have any specific card game stories, I did want to talk about the 2025 like card game schedule, because a lot of card games has kind of just waited a little bit, it seems, to get their next products out. At least that's what it felt like, because I was gripping my chair waiting for Supreme Darkness to come out in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
But in January and February, we actually have lots of potent releases. Like, and I'm always surprised it's still around, but Universus is having their solo leveling challenger deck come out in a few days, actually.
Okay.
The Digimon has the Chain of Liberation EX set coming out. That's in January 10th. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, the EX sets are the ones that are like...
kind of like side sets. Side sets, okay. Yeah. Pokemon TCG has Prismatic Evolutions. I'm sure there's a shiny Pikachu in there somewhere, or a Charizard.
Some shiny Gen 1 thing.
Supreme Darkness in January 24.
Looking forward to that. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait. Match the Gathering has Innistrad Remastered. It's one of their kind of remix sets where they reintroduce a bunch of older cards. And I believe some new ones, I believe. Altered TCG has Trial by Frost. Some people have been very bullish on Altered TCG. It's a very strange card game where instead of like playing monsters and battling your opponent, you're kind of like building a bridge to like get your characters to meet. It's a very interesting game.
Alex plays that?
He has played it. And he got flamed online for giving it a low score, but you know, it is what it is. And then Flesh and Blood has their The Hunted booster set and Blitz deck collection. And then February is also another good month because we have Magic the Gathering's Aether Drift set, which I describe as Gold Pride, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Archetype, but as an entire Magic set. Dragon Ball Super has New Adventure. Don't ask me what's in there. And that's not really a TCG. But yeah.
Basically, like, so it sounds like this year is kind of starting off.
It's starting off hot.
A lot of sets coming out for basically every game.
So if you broke the bank this Christmas, you might want to start getting your scruples together because.
Or if you got money for Christmas.
That's true. Join up the teammate, the APS Amplifier membership program.
Or just save it and get your favorite sets.
What are you doing, Paul? What?
We wouldn't mind if you did both.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
Some say. If you are an APS member, mm-hmm. your polls will always be blessed.
I have heard that rumor. Only one way to find out, I suppose. No, that's cool, though. It sounds like January and like early February are going to be pretty packed for card releases, which is good. I think it's always nice to kind of kick off a new year with like new metagames, new game-shifting stuff. I know I can't really speak to like all of these card games, but at least in the case of Yu-Gi-Oh!, Supreme Darkness isn't looking to like be a huge meta change from what I can tell, but it does look like it's one of those sets that supports just a lot of fan favorite stuff.
I can't wait.
And I am also still pretty excited about it because we get the rest of the Mermail cards. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been building. And the Dark Heroes come out. That's obviously very cool. So yeah, color me interested. Another quick card game announcement as well is that we're going to be attending the Bandai Card Game Fest in Orlando, Florida.
That's this weekend. If you're planning on going to that event, we will be there.
Yeah, so I'll be there. Alex, Alec, and Chris. We are...
How did you say Alex's name before mine? That's crazy. I'm sitting next to you.
He's the person I met first.
Wow. Technically true, but
yeah,
wow.
I met him like some small amount of hours before I met you. So the four of us will be there. Those three are the Bandai card game players of the group. I'm just there.
I'm a One Piece player now.
Yeah. You're a One Piece player now.
Yeah, they have there's a Buggy, the clown deck, and you know how I like Buggy, so.
So you're dropping Digimon forever is what I'm hearing.
Don't you dare say that.
Yeah. But we will be at Bandai Card Game Fest. We'd love to meet some of you guys. I think Alec might be on stage doing like a... That's not a bad...
I don't know why you keep avoiding this. You will be on stage playing the Gundam card game.
I think you're going to be on stage playing the games. I'm not that good at that.
But none of us are. The game's not out yet.
Yeah, so if you're going to be there, come say hi. We'd love to meet you. I think that's all for card games.
Yeah, nothing too specific here. I did check for Pokemon theft, but at least over the holidays, nothing was really reported that it was worth talking about. So
yeah.
Good job. Good. Hats off to all
stayed inside for
you
the holidays.
You didn't steal any Pokemon cards. I'm glad. No money laundering schemes with the cards. Yeah. No breaking into your card shop or breaking into a storage unit. Good job. You stayed warm this holiday.
One other little quick announcement, I suppose, just a podcast thing, is that this year my goal is going to be to try to get a new guest on the pod, like maybe once a month, somebody in the card game space. It could be like
Maximilian Pegasus.
Yeah. That's who we're going to have on the pod. I don't know. I mean, if there's somebody in the card game space, industry wise in particular, that you think would make for like a good guest, we would really love to hear it. You can let us know because like, obviously, you know, it could just be other content creators and that's fine too. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I like to get more insights from like, you know, what does somebody who works as a judge have to say or a vendor have to say? Or maybe even like if they could be allowed to, like somebody who's in like R&D at a company.
And we're going to fly them in and have them be here in person?
No. They'll have to call in. Don't have that kind of money. But yeah, I would love to have some different guests on. So if you guys have somebody in mind that you think would be cool, I will certainly look into it. I can't make any promises. We thought it'd just be a fun way to, you know, make the podcast a little more interesting. People always ask about guests.
That's so true. I mean, I know you guys get tired of our boring dynamic.
Yeah, there's nothing good about us at all.
We're just old regular bums.
We're sorry. We apologize. Okay, that's actually all the card game news. So,
all right, we're going to gaming.
Okay.
So I read something that seemed kind of controversial, but it makes more sense when I think about it. So Assassin's Creed Shadows will have a canon mode, like canon as far as like canonicity,
yeah,
that makes every dialogue decision for you.
The headline sounds a certain type of way, but go on.
So the creative director, Jonathan Dumont, was asked, or Dumont, I don't know how you pronounce that name, was asked by a fan on Reddit how much weight player choices have in Assassin's Creed Shadows. And he said, choices come more into play when recruiting allies and romancing some of the characters.
Okay.
Since the fan base is divided on branching dialogues, we have incorporated an option called canon mode, which allows you to play the game with choices already made for you to give you a choice-free experience. Hope this makes it fun for everyone.
How do you feel about that?
So,
I mean, I know, so, well, sorry, you first.
My knee-jerk reaction was, okay, people don't want to even make choices in video games anymore. I thought that was a big step in video games when you played your first game that let you make a decision that actually changed the events of the game. And at one point, I thought that's what we all wanted. We want our games to have branching storylines and options that actually mattered. But then now we don't. But I thought about it for a second after reading that. You know, in a lot of games, there's this kind of discourse that happens after a game has been out for, like, let's say 2 days. That's how long it takes people to start talking about them. You know, what's like the true ending of these video games? So many video games have branching paths and multiple endings that are so popular that I always see discourse. Hey, what's the true ending of this game? What's it mean? What's this ending? And the director for this game said, oh, we're taking all the guesswork out. You can find out.
Yeah, you can kind of get the default ending. Yeah, so what I was going to say is at first it kind of sounds like, what? Like, these video games are just so easy back in my day. No, but I do think this actually makes sense. Like, because it's not like it's really skipping anything. It's just sort of saying, like, here are what the kind of canon, just sort of responses that this character would have made and choices mm-hmm. they would have made in the story so that you can know how the story's just main intended ending would be. Some people would argue that maybe that takes away some of the immersion from the RPG, like, because, you know, maybe it's supposed to be open-ended in some people's eyes.
I mean, personally, from my gaming experience, I like games that let me make choices, and whatever ending I get, I feel like is my true ending. It kind of doesn't matter what the quote-unquote canon ending, because the choices I made got me this ending, so for me, this is how the game ends. But I do see how, you know, for some people, especially the completionists who play every single path of every game, you know, I imagine they would like to know, okay, well, which one was like what really happened? I did them all.
Yeah, you know, I remember this is sort of related. I remember like when I was a kid, I played like Shadow the Hedgehog, you know, like the game Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah,
and they had like, you know, multiple endings, like you kind of choose your own path, you know, be hero or dark or whatever. And I also thought that was cool, but I remember finding it a little bit odd just because, like, the endings were, they were kind of janky. Like, it was kind of
it's a Sonic game,
yeah. So the endings were a little bit janky, but I always thought it was like, okay, what's the default ending? Like, what's just the normal ending? And then when I found out what that was, which is to say, like, the normal ending is just like, yeah, he kind of just gets over his past and kind of just moves on. It's like, it's kind of dull and boring. Like, I found that it was more exciting to have these, like, let's make him a real bad guy. And like, he kills Eggman and kills Gun and whatever, you know, or like, I don't know. I always had more fun like picking different endings. And once I knew what the canon one was and that, like, okay, well, the next game is just going to continue from the canon ending. It kind of took some of the fun out of it for me. Has it ever felt like that? Like, I almost feel like if it's going to be like that, I would want it to be a game that doesn't even get a sequel. Like, I don't want a sequel because then a sequel will invalidate.
That's true.
The choices. That's very true.
So for me, the biggest game that I played recently with multiple endings was like Cyberpunk 2077. And I had a firm belief that I was going to play towards an ending and that was going to be my ending. It kind of didn't matter what the ending was. I did have to amend that because I initially got the bad ending where the main character takes their life because I didn't realize the path that I was on.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to go back. I don't need the game to end like this. But I got an ending. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the true ending to Cyberpunk 2077. The problem is that they will make a sequel. And
yeah, and it kind of just...
That's kind of an issue.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even really related to the story. Like, okay, Assassin's Creed has a canon thing. Like, good for them. But it is like a thought. Another game that reminds you of, too, I played Star Fox Command as a kid.
That's the DS game. Which I remember that one.
As opposed to Shadow the Hedgehog, where I just kind of, you know, cringe edgelord game for nerdy Sonic fans like me. Guilty pleasure, I would call it. But Star Fox Command, I actually kind of cared about the characters and like their futures because
they had to get all the endings.
Yeah, because they made it like very broad. Like it was like, you know, in this one, like everyone quits Star Fox and like Fox becomes a hobo and all this stuff. And like, no, but that's literally, or like in this one, like Crystal leaves him to date
Panther right?
or whatever and Star Wolf and like he's jealous, all these things. Or like in this one, there's one where people think that like Fox and Falco become gay, like just two gay uncles because like they go off and become like F-Zero racers or something. Like, it was very like the endings were just wild. Which by the way, like I don't have a problem. Like I thought all the endings were cool, but like they were so drastically different. It was the first game where I was like, wow, okay, like These decisions like actually matter because like these are these people's like livelihoods that go on to. And
whatever ending you that you like the most can just be your ending for the game.
There's some irony in that actually as a Star Fox fan because that was I think the last Star Fox game that ever even told an original like a continuing story.
Right.
After that, all they've done is just revisit Star Fox 64 over and over and over again, just retold it. But
to be a devil's advocate for my original take on this feature. Can you imagine this, right? You're playing the new Assassin's Creed game. You just boot it up. It asks you what difficulty you want to play on. It's like, hey, do you want to play on hard mode? It's like, well, I don't know if I want to. I got such a challenge. You want to play on normal mode? Like, I can play on normal mode, but what's this? It's like story mode where you make the fight so easy so I can just focus on the story. Yeah. All right. And it's like, okay, now do you want to play normally or with canon mode? So then I can combine the easy mode of the game with canon mode, so I don't have to make any decisions. So at that point, let me just put the controller down and just watch the game get played.
So, you know, what's interesting about that, because that's actually a whole conversation, is, you know, people are kind of angry that, like, these games are just making it so easy, and it's all, like, just cutscenes and movies. Like, if you want to go see a movie, go see a movie, right? Like,
right.
People will say this. And I think they have a point. Like, obviously, it is a little strange to, I guess, like, purchase a now $70 game with the intention of kind of just not playing it really, or like playing it just a little bit and experiencing the story. But now that I think about it, there's so much money that goes into making these games now, like mocapping and voice acting and like all this kind of cinematography and stuff. It would kind of suck if somebody just bought the game, found a difficult level that they couldn't get past, and was then barred from seeing all the work that the devs put in to like kind of present the story. So I guess
that's me in Armored Core.
Yeah. So I guess it kind of makes sense to like, you know, just kind of make a mode where you can just enjoy it.
For full price, Paul.
Yeah, I still haven't made it past the first boss.
And Paul was there. I fought that boss for 2 weeks. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that maybe you're in the target demographic now of like you suck at these games, but like they want to let you still be able to.
I just don't play soul style games anymore. I've given up. I'm not good enough to do it.
Yeah. So, but as far as the feature goes, cool. I know it's probably a little controversial, but I think it's cool. I think it's fine. Like,
the most important thing to remember is you don't have to enable a mode like this. If you want to play your games honestly and make your own decisions, you don't have to enable canon mode. You can just leave it off. That's most of these more accessible features of games are optional. You can just ignore it. Getting mad about it doesn't actually make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think accessibility features and stuff are never really a bad thing as long as they're at least made optional, I guess, for the people who...
Except in Street Fighter, where they have the alternative input commands. And
the modern controls.
Sometimes I get really angry when people do things on frame one, and I'm like, I practiced for 48 straight hours, and I can't do anything on frame one, and you picked up the game today, and you mashed some buttons, and you did your super on the very first available frame.
Yeah. Any other gaming stories?
Oh, yeah.
Because I was going to kind of like, I guess, just sort them out. So, like, we'll do the gaming and then we'll get into some of the social media stories that
this
I have.
This one is, it's gaming and gaming adjacent. And you will recognize a part of this.
All right.
So, Rayman is back.
Yay.
But probably not how you want.
Nay. How's he back?
So, Paul, when was the last time you saw Rayman?
In that one show we watched on Netflix.
What was it called? Like Captain Hulu. Laserhawk, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard of Captain Laserhawk the game?
No. Are they making a game out of that?
Captain Laserhawk the game, which is a top-down multiplayer shooter, wonderful, that utilizes NFTs and blockchain technology.
Oh, it's currently wild, Ubisoft.
Early access on PC. And somehow features Rayman. I say somehow, but that's within their, that's one of their IPs.
So an NFT-based
like multiplayer shooter. Captain Laserhawk the game.
You said top-down?
Yes.
How's that work?
I actually couldn't find a picture of it, but it's a top-down multiplayer shooter.
I'm just like being slow. Like it's hard visualizing. Like, is it like a like an arcade shooter thing where you.
That's what it sounds like. I'm trying to find a picture of Captain Laserhawk the game without opening up their annoying website.
I guess what I'm maybe, you know, screw that. The thing I'm more interested in is, so how do the NFTs factor in? Because, you know, I love my NFTs. I got to get as many.
You are the biggest NFT fan that I know.
Huge NFT guy. I've got a collection of, what are they called? The monkeys and the yachts.
The Yacht Club monkeys?
Yeah, the Bored Ape.
Yeah, them.
Bored Ape.
Bathing Ape?
Yeah, that's what I'm a big Bored Ape guy.
According to GameFile, Steven Totillo, the game is based on a Netflix show, Captain Laserhawk.
Which was a pretty decent show. I liked
it. A Blood Dragon remix, which itself is based on the Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon spinoff. In Captain Laserhawk, the game, Rayman is simply the announcer for death matches, so he's not actually playable.
Okay.
Well. Oh, well, that's lame. He played a much bigger role in the Captain Laserhawk show, so that's a bit disappointing. The game requires players to have a Niji Warrior NFT to play. What's a Niji Warrior? A Rayman profile picture can also be purchased for 750 virtual coins and attached to your Niji Warrior NFT. So you need an NFT to even play this game.
Talk about barrier to entry.
That's pretty much the extent of Rayman's involvement in this game. Ubisoft has quietly released this game to little fanfare, as there aren't many social media posts even acknowledging its existence.
You know, I have to say, I feel like Ubisoft's just gonna, they're just kind of going down the drain.
Just doing whatever to make a buck.
Anytime I hear anything about them, it kind of just seems like it's like something, something NFTs, something, something weird AI thing, something, something like failed.
And it doesn't make sense because they have such a long storied gaming history. How did we get here?
I mean, if nothing else, people still like the Assassin's Creed games obviously still get a lot of buzz, but it seems like that's about the only thing that does. And even then, I guess like the buzz around Assassin's Creed Shadows has been somewhat controversial, but at least it's not using NFTs as far as I know. So that's
thankfully. Yeah, I can't even find a good picture of this game
because it's just that unknown, uncared about,
and I'm so disappointed in Ubisoft.
Yeah, it's very disappointing to hear like just NFT game,
an NFT game using characters that people actually care about. Rayman is a beloved character, and you're telling me this is the best you can do?
Yeah, I mean. You know, I know that there is this conversation to be had, and I actually want to get some of the audience's sort of input on this, because I don't think this isn't one of these, like, there's a right or wrong answer to it, or I'm, like, looking to hear a certain...
Unless I disagree.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, how do you feel about this? And this isn't really related to the Rayman game, per se, but I was watching this video about, like, how so much of video game... kind of excitement and buzz today is around, you know, remakes and re-releases and like remasters and stuff. And I've been noticing more and more that a lot of people if you're a Sonic fan right now, one of the things that a lot of Sonic fans have like wanted for a long time is like maybe a Sonic Adventure remaster Sonic Adventure or right. Sonic Adventure 2. And to the extent that there are some people who would maybe even want that more than a new game. And then I looked and there's actually a lot of different just like sort of gaming IPs and stuff where people want like just the old game to just come out again and be remastered. And it kind of got me thinking like, which do you prefer? Like, do you think you want your favorite series to move forward with a game that might kind of have lost its way or whatever, like, you know, say like Final Fantasy 16 wasn't seen as like a very good traditional Final Fantasy. It kind of did its own thing and, you know, floundered in some places because of it, but kind of did some other flourished in others. Or do you want more like, okay, well, remake, rebirth, whatever part 3 is, and then they're going to announce that they're doing the same thing for Final Fantasy 8. They're going to do 8 like remake or something, you know. No, I don't know.
Oh.
But which would you prefer? Like, do you want...
I'm mad I got kind of excited.
Yeah, I got all excited.
I'm so upset.
Where do you land on that? Just real quick.
So, in recent memory, I can think of two games that fit this question.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw very differing results from them. You know, there was the Pokemon Diamond and Pearl remakes, which were very honest remakes and BDSP. Repolishing... of those games.
Very buggy.
there were issues, but that's what's. But the thing is, we weren't willing to accept what we were getting with those games. Mm-hmm. They were like, you want a Diamond and Pearl remake? Cool, we're gonna do that, but that comes with issues. This is not we're not giving you the same exact game again. There's a new engine. It's gonna work a little bit differently, and it's gonna betray some expectations because it's not the original game.
Okay.
But I heard people tell me that that was a bad remake and it was boring. Now, you can go to Final Fantasy VII with the name Remake. It's literally in the name. And it's a very... Calling that a remake is a bit of a lie. It's a retelling of a story that we know, but otherwise, it's nothing like the original Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, it's just, it's so far removed from the way that games would have been developed. Like, it's just,
It doesn't even play.
It doesn't play like it.
Calling it a remake is kind of, it's a lie when the gameplay style is different.
What do you prefer? I mean, so, I know that's like a loaded question.
No, that's a great question. What do I prefer? It depends on my goal. For a lot of people, they want remakes of their favorite games because those games are like shoe-ins for entertainment, right? I loved it the first time. If it just looked newer, I'd love it again.
Yeah.
And Diamond and Pearl tried that, and people weren't happy. Final Fantasy is like, well, we won't even bother. We're just going to use the same like world and characters and otherwise make a brand new game. Like,
yeah.
I would guess that Diamond and Pearl is actually closer to what people would actually prefer in a remake. But you have to stop being so critical. At least we need to stop being so critical. If they're going to give you the remake of one of your favorite games, it can't ever be as good as the original for a lot of reasons. Yeah,
I mean, I know with the Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl thing, most of the criticism was around like glitches and then also like they didn't use the platinum decks, which that's like its whole thing. But I was just thinking about like how some of the discourse this year. So, okay. That game, Mario, The Thousand Year Door, Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, that got re-released.
That was a remake, right?
Yeah, that was re-released on Switch or whatever. And what's interesting is the controversy was around, like, it runs at 30 FPS, but the graphics are better. But it doesn't run at 60 like the GameCube version. And so there was so much discourse about this. Like, just people really, like, kind of just angst, you know, it's just kind of going at each other's throats a little bit on Twitter over it. And somebody pointed something out that I thought was, like, really poignant, which is whenever there's a remake or a remaster, it's only inevitable that like the only thing we can really talk about is what changed from the original. Right. It's not the only thing we can talk about, but like that's always going to be the primary thing is like what's different. Did the frame rate change? Did they take something out? Did something like, was something censored or rewritten? You know, just all these. So it kind of made me think like, I don't know if we'll ever get tired of like just getting remakes and remasters, but like, when I think about like how like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or, you know, Part 3 or whatever that is like definitely taking some resources away from like a Final Fantasy 17. Mm-hmm. And I would kind of rather just see a 17. But this is all a tangent. I don't know. Anyway,
But you didn't play Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, that's
so you
true.
Have no you don't have no connection, but you have less of a connection to the remake series than someone who played and loved 7.
I mean, and it's weird because I love the remake games, but it's just also like, God, they need to be like 3 of them?
It was an ambitious task. And I personally, if I'm being honest, I wish they didn't exist. I've enjoyed playing them. I did. It's just...
They complicate things if you're a fan. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think remakes inevitably will always be a little bit worse than the game that they come from because those games are on a pedestal already for us.
Yeah.
Those games had faults, but now that we're older and we see them through these rose-tinted glasses, those games are perfect to us.
Yeah.
Like you can't remake perfection, and that's a problem we're going to run into kind of forever.
Yeah, we got really into the weeds on this. I didn't plan for it to, but you know. Okay, well, I've got a story.
What you got?
So this one's kind of fun. Do you, you watch stuff on Netflix and stuff? Yes.
I recently reactivated my Netflix account. So yeah.
Yeah, I recently reactivated.
Very recently.
Well, let me find the story. Okay. Netflix execs tell screenwriters to have characters announce what they're doing so that viewers who have a program on in the background can follow along. They also have thousands of micro genres, including casual viewing, which is used for movies and TV that go down best when you're not paying attention. So basically, yeah. Okay.
All right.
I remember hearing about this like sometime last year as well, but basically they are trying to tell, you know, Netflix creators, people who are making movies, documentaries, and shows to dumb it down. Have the characters say what they're doing, kind of reiterate and be very expository, because today's viewer is probably scrolling on their phone and only maybe halfway paying attention to the show. And so they're kind of trying to lean into this by just being like, listen, I know, like, you know, you maybe have this creative vision, but you need to write it so that people can just always kind of halfway kind of hear like what's going on in the background and just know that they just went to this place. They just sat down at this table and they just, you know, here's what they're thinking exactly. So yeah, what are your thoughts about this? When you hear this?
I know a lot of people will probably want to jump down Netflix's throat for such a abhorrent thing, but this is merely a fact of life today. Attention spans are low, and a lot of times people they'll quote unquote watch a movie or show while doing something else. And I've seen people, and even myself at times, I will opt to not watch a particular TV show or movie if it needs to, if it requires 100% of my attention, because I don't always have 100% of my attention to give. If I have to get something done or if I'm doing something on the side, I can't focus and appreciate all of what this show or movie is going to give me. So I'd rather put on something I don't have to pay as much attention to. Usually it's like dumber, lighter fare. I don't love it as much as I'm going to enjoy the other show when I finally have time to watch it. But when you're just trying to fit something in into like an awkward time where you don't, where you're doing something, but that something isn't super important, you like to have something you can put on.
Yeah.
It's weird though, right? Telling like writers and directors, hey, you need to make this show as if at any time your viewer could get up and leave, but he'll leave it on though.
Yeah, I'm so mixed on this sort of thing, because I do think it's kind of like, you know, dumbing it down for the audience, treating your audience as though they are effectively like, yeah, you don't have an attention span. You can't like be bothered to pay attention. But you're right. It's kind of like, it's like a fact of life now. People have shorter attention spans. People want more stimuli, you know? People like having kind of like three screens all playing. Like, you know, when you see the shorts that are like, it's some excerpt from a podcast and then there's like Temple Run or whatever, or Subway Surfers or something, or like,
yeah,
on the bottom, just so that people can like, we'll just
double consume.
They're consuming two things. It keeps them watching, you know, and it loops. It does suck though. Like I guess, like, because if you are a more dignified writer, like, you know, I feel like your talents might be kind of getting a little bit limited in this way. But one thought that I had though was that maybe it just kind of creates a new genre of like modern media where this is, it's just the norm. Like that becomes good writing because you are it's something that more people can enjoy.
Well, so my first thought is that I don't think this is necessarily dumbing down TV shows and movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just a different skill set that you have to utilize. Because when you're writing a script, you're writing a scene for a movie or show, you know, there's an expectation that someone is watching it the whole time so that you don't have to always explain what's going to happen. You can just, the actor will perform what happens. So yeah, in some ways you can, you do a mix of letting the screen tell the story versus the script tell the story.
Yeah.
In this case, you need the script to tell more of the story. And I think you flex a different kind of writing muscle when you have to think about your screenplay as kind of a, weirdly enough, reminds me like an audiobook almost.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, a lot of people would say, and I would tend to agree, that show don't tell is generally the stronger form of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Like people would rather, you know, I think things are at their best when you can tell from the character's actions and, you know, their performance that they have changed, gone through some sort of an arc, learned something, have a certain quality about them. You know, you just telling me that like Tony Stark is really smart and has a bajillion IQ is cool, but showing the feats that he can do, the inventions that he's made and how useful they are, that like, you know, sells me more on, okay, you're showing me this is a smart person. You're not just telling me that that he is. So I do think some of that's going to kind of be lost because in a lot of these shows, it sounds to me like the goal will be to sort of reiterate to you maybe over and over even that, hey, here's this character trait that this character has. And just in case you missed that last episode, he is really smart. Just in case you didn't know that, he is.
When you read a book, you know, books, you know, they don't really have the ability to show, not tell. Novels oftentimes have to reiterate every bit of a character's like motivations and goals and why they're doing the things they're doing because, well, they can't just show you things. They kind of have to tell you what the main character is thinking. And it's weird, but if it's good enough for a book, and that's, I think, the benefits like an audiobook is since they just read what's written in the book, it helps you keep up with it. I think that frees maybe the director or the animators, whoever are working on this show, to focus on the visual moment, like the really big visual moments for a TV show. Because like when someone's busy and they're not paying attention to a show, oftentimes they'll stop what they're doing when there's like a big fight scene or a conflict and like, ooh, they're like, ooh, ah. But maybe during these more dialogue heavy scenes, it allows the director to just kind of take some time off. Like, okay, we don't have to go crazy. They're not watching anyway. Which, okay, now it definitely sounds like Dumbing It Down. I said that. It's like, okay, that does sound like Dumbing It Down.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I guess like casual viewing is fine. Who am I to judge? Like, you know, you're paying your Netflix sub. So like how you choose to engage with the content on there is like not really anyone else's business. But it does, you know, it just makes you wonder. Maybe it is a little bit.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I consume, I would call that casual viewing, that I just would not really care to be fully immersed in. Those Jurassic World movies, I just don't care to pay a lot of attention to them. If someone's watching one and I walk into a room, I whip my phone out and I play a phone game while kind of glancing at the screen every so often. Ooh, that was cool. Then I get back to what I'm doing. Fast and Furious movies. I've never sat down and watched a complete one since Fast 5, but I've seen many moments of the Fast and the Furious while also scrolling on my phone or like on my tablet or something.
Yeah, it's got a hint of dystopianness to it, but like not too bad, right?
I don't think it's this is the transition, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. To the next story, which gets a little more dystopian. All right. So, you know, that was a nice story. It's like, well, some people can appreciate this. Meta confirms they plan to add tons of AI-generated users to Instagram and Facebook. They will have bios, profile pics, and can share content.
Bots.
AI-generated users, Alec.
Those are bots.
AI-generated users. So here's
I could have sworn, at least in the States, they're supposed to be making it illegal to have, like, bots on your platforms.
Well, these won't be considered bots because they're going to be engaging. You ever heard of the dead internet theory?
Yeah.
It's coming true. So we expect these AIs to actually, over time, exist on our platforms, kind of in the same way that accounts do. They think this and other AI products they're rolling out will help attract and retain a younger audience. With their new tools, users will be able to create these AI profiles. 100,000 have already been created, but creators have kept them private. And there's an example. This is an AI generated Facebook account.
This guy's Brian.
Name is Brian, everybody's grandpa, retired textile businessman who's always learning. He's a retired textile businessman, Alec. He lived a life. Message me to talk about anything. Available in the U.S. Now, here's one of his posts.
Hell no.
Join his post. He's posting like a friend of yours might on Facebook. Combining my two passions, my grandkids and sewing. I love creating something with my own hand and seeing the joy on my grandkids' faces when they wear something I made just for them. It's a connection to the past, a way to pass down traditions and love.
Hell no. Who? This is Facebook and...
Facebook, like Meta. So they're going to be on Facebook. They're going to be on Instagram. Maybe they'll even be like WhatsApp, I guess.
If you can't make... a popular social media site, just say it. You don't need to populate it with a bunch of AI bots to try and make up for the fact that people don't really want to use your platform the way that you're using it. Like,
so many. Yeah, I know. It's because, so here's the thing. Meta isn't having, like, an, to my knowledge, they're not having a user issue. Like, I mean, I'm sure they've plateaued in terms of signups. Like, not that I'm many sure more people can. But yeah, like, Facebook's, you know, monthly active user numbers dwarf Twitter's, actually, if you can believe it. Same with Instagram. There are, like, these sites are huge. But I guess that maybe they're finding young people aren't signing up enough or aren't engaging enough.
So
I
know they're going to use bots to attract children. This sounds criminal. I'm not going to hold you. It sounds criminal.
Yeah.
Like, we just had the whole, like, AI, what, chat AI, whatever, character AI stories. Like, so what? Now Meta's going to start luring children into an abyss of, like, dark suicidal thoughts and murderous impulses towards their parents?
Yeah, so the goal is to improve engagement. And so I guess here's the angle I assume that they're coming from with this, is that, like, there are a lot of lurkers on social media.
Yes.
I'm sure that you or maybe even I would kind of fall into that category. At least my personal, like, Facebook and stuff. I don't really post. I scroll. I see what people are up to. I like things.
I don't lurk as much on Twitter anymore since now my likes are private.
Yeah. But on, so what they're kind of trying to do, I think, here from what you saw from that profile is they're going to, like, be making just profiles that blend in. They look just like a normal person's profile on Facebook. It's a Facebook account that might send you a friend request or comment on one of your things. And I assume maybe they'll even be able to, like, DM you, which gets troubling. Actually, it sounds like he
absolutely
definitely will.
Absolutely unacceptable.
Now, I was trying to think to myself, okay, what is, like, who is going to engage with this? Like, this is ridiculous, right? But then I realized, you know, there's actually a lot of, like, kind of the loner types, a loser, you might call them.
Well, who I noticed, Brian never said that they were an AI account.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting to that.
So really, the target is anyone who can't recognize AI content.
So I was going to think there's two people. There's the loser. I'm saying loser, like,
dang,
in a general sense. Like, this person's a loner. They're kind of maybe a little weird. And, like, they post on social media. You know, the worst thing when you post on social media is, like, you might remember this from, like, high school or college. Like, you post a picture and, like, no one likes it.
That's that pain.
You know,
it's
kind of painful.
Any friends.
Especially because, like, you know, it's just, or the only person who likes it is, like, your one best friend or, like, your parent who's on there or something.
And they holding you down to this day.
So I think that the goal is when this guy posts his weird, edgy thoughts and, like, kind of maybe conspiracies or who knows what he's posting, maybe his uncouth thoughts on women or something. Now there will, normally he would just get no likes, no engagement. He feels shitty and terrible about himself. Now, though, there will be just this account that will, like, comment and be like, yeah, you know, like, you're right. That's a good point. I never thought about that. Like, that's a good point. And he'll maybe, it won't even be like a billion likes. It'll probably be something like he'll get like 15 or 20 likes. And, you know,
still
the vast majority of which are AI. And a few comments that kind of just tell him, like, you know, yeah, like, yeah, that's right. Good point. And that will keep him on the site. And, like, for Meta, that's all they need. They just want to retain people. But I do worry, though, that that will cause this person to, because, like you said, it's going to be someone who maybe can't distinguish. And so, like, they're now going to substitute that personal interaction with this soulless AI account. And that's just not great to me. And in the second group that the second group is old people. Your grandma.
Old people can't tell.
Your grandpa, like, you know, they literally cannot tell the difference. These are already people sharing weird AI-generated posts on Facebook about who knows what. And now, like, they will have these AI accounts just, like, commenting and saying things. It's crazy.
This unsafe. It sounds, what it should be illegal. I hated everything about this story. There wasn't a good thing in there.
I know, yeah. It's dystopian. Oh,
right down to the AI-generated picture of Brian. Boy.
Something about that is, you are right. Something about that is especially irritating because it's like, okay, it's this profile. He's got this name. I think the part that got me the most, besides the fact that, like, they AI-generated a picture of him sewing or whatever, is that they don't disclose that it's AI, or at least there's nothing. I mean, maybe there's, like, something on there that said it, but
I would hope
it's
so,
nothing super
least.
Noticeable. But also, like, he has this backstory. like these grandkids that he talks about that don't exist. It's like, yeah, you know, like I love my grandkids and I make them these things. No, you don't, because you can't. Like, you're not real. Like
fiction belongs in like books and TV and games. Fiction should not be posing as people on social media, because the entire point of this media is to be social. You can't be social with a program. They don't exist.
Yeah, they don't. And it's going to be kind of strange when you hit that wall. Like, okay, so, you know, let's say like Alec is, you're a bit of a loner, you know, you post on social media and like people don't really like your posts.
They don't.
And you have, you know, like you want a girlfriend, but like no one likes you. So then you start AI posting girlfriend. One day. Well, no, it's not going to be that overt, actually. It's going to be like, okay, you post another one of your, you know, your 734th selfie to get no likes. But finally, they start liking them. If you, you know, like, oh, some girl you don't really know, like, yeah, likes them. She kind of looks like she'd be your type. You know, the data has told Meta that that's the type you might like.
Oh, Botan from Yu Yu Hakusho?
Yeah, she's there. And nice. So, like, you know, so this girl, you know, Rachel or something, like, comments and just like, oh, like, you know, like, you're so cute. This, that, and the other, like, message me. And so you do, because you're lonely and you're in a low point. And you start messaging her, but like, what happens when you kind of reach the inevitable wall of like, okay, so when can we meet? Because you can't. And that's where I think like it's going to really be weird for people to come to grips with this, because it's like, you can try to put a Band-Aid on, you know, Joe Blow's pain and loneliness, but he still won't be able to like meet this girl. Oh, it's easy,
Paul. That's when they start making their AI Discord profiles and they start doing their AI gaming. Like, oh, we can't meet up, but I'll call you on Discord and we can play Helldivers 2 together.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do wonder, like, you know, when that inevitable meetup is intended to happen, like, you know, like, what comes of it? Like, do you just...
I mean, look, as someone who's done the online dating thing, many a girl has refused to, like, meet up. And even after sending her $1,500, like, she's still just too busy and can't get free from the hospital. I'll send her $500 and see if she, like, changes her mind. But, like, I don't know.
It is something, I mean, in all seriousness.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Sure it was. No, in all seriousness, though, like, you know. I don't like this. I just think
I hate it.
Very dangerous. It's very concerning. It seems just disingenuine. Like, I don't know. It's not.
I want Congress to go ahead and put a stop to it. If we can ban TikTok, let's go ahead and ban AI on Meta platforms. Especially since, you know, with the TikTok ban allegedly coming into play this month, you know, more people will be going to back to their Meta platforms and they'll have AI waiting for them.
That's actually like probably part of the goal. Like, you know, I mean, just if they're gonna have to leave TikTok and come to Meta, now they can meet some AI friends.
Oh, then the AI makes their own reels. Oh god, it's getting out of hand.
That's actually gonna probably happen.
They, you know, they do say that these AI video generating platforms, they can make like a 10-second video.
It's all you need. A little TikTok dance or something else. Anyway, you got any more stories?
Do I have any more stories?
You know, while we wipe
the dystopia. This isn't a story. Just I want to point out the fact that they showed off the PlayStation Plus games for the first month of 2025.
Yeah.
And Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League is on the list.
This is that one that wasn't too popular.
Wasn't too popular is an understatement. The game is horrible. But some people have found some reason to play it. And now, with a PlayStation Plus subscription, you too can play the massively underwhelming game Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Now, to be fair, the subscription will cost you $10. And I bring that up only because last I checked, it is worth about $4 on PC, on Steam. So, you know, if you really, really want to try out this bad game, maybe spend your $4. I don't know.
Yeah. What's that one Star Wars Outlaws?
Star Wars Outlaws.
Alex was telling me he wanted to try it out. And then like it either went on sale or maybe it's like a PSN game. So...
like, I don't remember what happened to Star Wars Outlaws after its very fumbled release.
I'm kind of starting to just think at this point that, like, when these bad games... sorry, I don't want to... I mean, I haven't played them, so I'm not going to... I guess I shouldn't call them bad. when these games that are poorly received come out and, like, you know, they're kind of just commercial flops, I guess outside of Concord, which is just outright gone, maybe it's best to just, like, wait a year and let that shit come to either, like, some discount sale on Steam or, like, you know, a PSN, Xbox Live, like, monthly game and just, you know, maybe you can enjoy that.
I mean, games can bounce back, and sometimes being able to get them on that discount, it can really save you. I mean, I remember when Cyberpunk was at its worst, and you could get a copy of Cyberpunk for, I want to say, like, 20 or less. And, like, it's bounced back with Phantom Liberty, and now you can't find those cheap copies of Cyberpunk anymore. So, yeah. You know, maybe you get your game when it's on its worst point and then hope the developers fix it. Right? They'll fix it.
I mean, probably, right?
Sure. Every game gets fixed. They don't get shut down like Concord.
You're going to be trying out, what is it, Suicide Squad?
Absolutely not.
I mean, hey, I mean, listen, it's cheap. Maybe it's worth a shot.
My money's worth too much to me. I'd rather use it in gacha games.
I've actually heard someone say they had a pretty good time with the game.
I'm sure if you lower your expectations enough, you can enjoy virtually anything.
That's mean.
It's true.
Well, anyway, a couple more little quick stories. TikTok adds dislike button to videos. Speaking of TikTok maybe getting banned. At the end of December, users began noticing a new button added to the right side of videos. Placed directly below the favorite button is a new dislike option, complete with a thumbs down image. Now, it's designed to help customize your For You page by telling the algorithm that you don't want to see other videos like it.
Right.
No matter the content. The dislike button isn't available for everybody, but those who have it have been left shocked at the new addition.
I am the decider.
So I think some people kind of are confused because they think that when you hit dislike, it's like it's saying like, okay, bad video, like I don't like this, suppress, thumbs right. down, like bad, disagree. When it's supposed to kind of be more of like an algorithm curation tool, where it's like, okay, don't show me more of this.
Right, but now that you've put that algorithm curation tool in people's hands, if enough people say, hey, we don't like this, there it would make perfect sense for the algorithm just to, in general, put that video out to fewer people. But it also does help TikTok create a better profile of each individual user that has this feature, because, you know, all these sites, they build very robust profiles of each of us, and they can say, okay, these types of people, let's say, what are we, black men in our 30s? Actually, you're not in your 30s quite yet, but still, close enough, right? We're black men in our 30s. We both dislike the same video. TikTok might say, you know, black men in their 30s kind of don't like this video, so let's not suggest this to any other black men in their 30s.
Yeah,
Or is that too YouTube algorithm-y?
I mean, I don't really know. Like, I don't use TikTok enough to really get a feel for what influence, like, I mean, they say the algorithm is very good at learning you very fast on TikTok.
It seems to be extremely specific.
But on YouTube, I know that, like, you know, there's like not interested buttons that you can select. YouTube, I think, that kind of uses more of like a watch time and satisfaction metric more so. Like, you know, if you chose to click on something, that's pretty good, but that's not the full story. It's also like, you know, how long did you watch it after you chose to click it? Which is why, by the way, if you ever watch an APS video, make sure that you watch the whole thing.
Let it run.
Just let it run. Just leave it.
Hey, if you got to do something else, you know, we'll start writing the scripts so that we'll just keep saying what we're doing.
We'll announce
so that you don't have to watch. You can just kind of listen.
But yeah, you know, I think like that's like YouTube's approach. I guess with TikTok, they're just kind of like, just tell us what you don't want to see and we'll just throw some more at you. And
I mean, they've got plenty of content.
Yeah, there's just plenty.
I'd be horrified to know just how many individual videos exist on that platform.
I would venture a guess that there are more TikToks than maybe there are, like, YouTube videos. Nah, that's probably extreme, but, like,
I don't know.
It's probably closing the gap faster than you would imagine.
Right.
Because like, it's just so easy. Like, there's just people who, like, upload any old 5-second thing.
While I don't use TikTok often, I do remember seeing someone upload a failed TikTok challenge. Like, they were trying to do, like, a TikTok dance, and they just did it for, like, 5 seconds. They messed up, and they still uploaded
it. Just kept it up there.
I was like, well, that's weird. So, you just, every one of your trials to do this dance, you just uploaded all of them? That's insane. But I could never imagine doing that on YouTube, but it's a different platform, different mindsets, different things work there.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's interesting. I wasn't really sure, like, what exactly to think of it, so I was just like, oh, well. That is a story. I mean, it sounds like TikTok might not be around for much longer, so.
That's true. Allegedly, it's supposed to be banned this month in the States.
They say that. Do you think it's going to happen? Like, I just feel like it seems sudden. Like, I just don't think it's actually going to happen.
I feel like there's going to be some emergency thing that will, like, pause it. Or maybe it will happen. I don't know. Yeah, we've never had, like, such a major piece of the internet banned in the States before. It hurts for me to even call TikTok a major part of the internet, but it is. It is. It's hard. You'd be hard pressed to walk around in broad daylight and not see 15 people scrolling through TikToks.
Yeah. All right. Any more stories?
No, I'm tapped out.
Cool. That means it's time to do the first puff of pot in 2025.
All right. See, I feel like we should leave the marijuana metaphors in 2024.
Who says they're metaphors?
This year, it's all about. I should have thought about that joke before I got here.
Yeah.
It's too late. All right. Don't worry, guys. Next episode, that joke's ready. Everybody in the
comedy club is staring at you. They're disappointed. Some people are getting up to leave.
The setup was there, but I hadn't thought of the punchline.
Okay. Well, anyways, we do have some viewer questions. As always, you guys love to submit these. They get longer every time. I'm going to try to actually like find a better way of maybe doing viewer submissions. If anybody's got like a suggestion for that. I've read some people's suggestions about them and like
two guys, one pot.
We'll figure something out. I don't know. Either way, so
a potential punchline there. I'm shopping it. I'm shopping it.
Here is the first question. This is a Yu-Gi-Oh! Related one. Where do you guys draw the line of being a skilled Yu-Gi-Oh! Player and being competent enough to just pilot a deck? Or is there a mix of both? Kind of an interesting question.
So where do we land on that? Or
I guess
or how do we define these things?
It's like, yeah, I think this person is maybe asking like, what makes a skilled Yu-Gi-Oh! Player versus just maybe a competent one in our eyes?
Oh, okay. I think that's... I think to me it's fairly simple, but I think to maybe others it's a... It might not be as obvious.
What are you thinking? Where's your head going?
So I think 90% of Yu-Gi-Oh! Players can become competent with virtually any deck. And by competent, I mean being able to flowchart through the deck's plays and just do what the deck is supposed to do. You're playing you're playing Labyrinth, you're getting your traps, you're recycling your monster, you're recycling your cards, and you're just doing the lab thing. Yeah. You know, you're playing your insert combo deck, right?
You built
your board, it has five interruptions, like, and you can do it consistently. That I think that's competent when the deck, you can make the deck work the way it's supposed to. But a skilled Yu-Gi-Oh! Player knows how to like read the flow of a game and they augment those plays to counteract what they expect their opponent is expecting. It's very funny, but have you ever noticed that in the high level tournament matches, the games they typically don't go quite as like planned, right?
Yeah, they don't.
A lot of times those games become very scrappy and it's not a lot of just like, I built my board and you're shut out. It happens, but a lot of times those games get very scrappy because players are finding the nuance in their plays to try and interrupt each other in ways the other one's not expecting. Or they have things built into their deck that most people don't have in their deck to try and counter very specific moments and plays.
I get what you're saying.
Crazy.
I can add on to that too, is I think that, like the average player, I think that you can learn how to play the basics of like any deck. I don't think that there is really an example of a deck in Yu-Gi-Oh! That you couldn't just kind of like learn through some rehearsal, right?
Right.
You can learn even like decks that are kind of sometimes known for being like complicated, like maybe DDD or something, right? People like to say like that's a complicated deck.
Although
that's actually not even really like true anymore, because thanks to a lot of the newer stuff, they just tend to streamline it more.
I mean, there has been a large push towards simpler combos.
But yeah, I think anybody can kind of learn how to, like you said, like do Labyrinth loops, do some Ritual Beast things, do like any deck that sounds crazy, you can kind of just learn it. I do think that the distinction then lies with players who are able to like better anticipate hand traps, better anticipate interruption, you know, things like that. Like when you hear top players maybe talking about like playing around Droll, playing around Nibiru, playing around, you know, like this set of hand traps that I predict my opponent has, and sort of making those reads, using any information that they can glean from like one interaction. Like, okay, you activated this hand trap first, which suggests that you don't have this other one because you would have had to use, you know, you can kind of like piecing those things together feels like one of the biggest differentiators.
It's a huge hurdle to make because, you know, you'll watch these combo videos online and they'll show you some generic combos and, you know, this combo gets around this, this combo gets around that. But to actually utilize those things in the moment where if you learned, let's say we're playing Super Heavy Samurai and you learned, you know, a combo that gets around draw, you have a combo that gets around nib. Knowing which route to go in the moment, I think that's what separates a competent player from a good player. Because if you start trying to play around Nibiru and they don't have it, you could be setting yourself up for failure. That's where the reads come in. That's where the like the guesswork comes in. And you only get that way from just competing at a high level at this game over and over again until you just get used to certain like feelings.
I think there's like a certain degree of table experience that comes with it. You know, I'm not saying, like, obviously I'm not, you know, out here winning YCS events, but I do think that like when you've sat down at the table enough through regionals or YCS events or whatever, you do start to realize that like this game, there is more to this game than just, you know, regurgitating the combo that you rehearsed. Right. Because it's just not actually going to go like that every time. Like, and that's, I think, where I see a lot of players like kind of get frustrated with the game or like automatically quit because like this thing got hand trapped and I'm so mad and this is stupid and like, you know, whatever. But yeah, like you have to kind of anticipate that stuff and plan for it because that's kind of what separates the, you know, men from the boys, so to speak. Next question. Hi, I've been away from Yu-Gi-Oh! For about 18 years.
Woo!
And recently started getting back into it. I've noticed that so many decks are no longer pure archetype, but a blend of several. Do you think we could ever have a style of play that only limits to the specific archetype to help balance the game for maybe more mid-tier decks so people can enjoy what they built without having to worry about Snake Eye, Fiend Smith, but only Snake Eye? Love the channel. Can't wait for the next Pod of Greed.
That would require a new format.
Yeah. So maybe the better way to even approach this question is like, would that be a good format? And I think it would.
I think it could be fine. I mean, when typically in like, it might have changed recently. Konami designs these archetypes, you know, as just the one archetype. Sometimes, you know, there'll be like little pieces of support they design that works with the archetype, but they usually do not design an archetype to work with other archetypes. There are examples of that to the contrary, but like, for the most part, you're supposed to play these archetypes, you know, with their support. So I don't think that would be a bad thing. I don't think that would be a wrong thing. It could make for some awkward matchups, right? Because some archetypes are not built to be the strongest.
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely, if you were to have like a just, okay, I like building decks pure, by the way. I tend to enjoy, like, I don't really want to add extra engines and hybrid into my decks until I feel like there's no other choice. I like to keep them pure. I want to play like pure Voiceless Voice or pure Vanquish Soul. You know, obviously I've got different lines all across, whatever. But the point is, like, I do like playing decks kind of as they were intended because I think it's a fun experiment to see how they were designed and, like, what can this deck deal with in its own, you know, kind of personal engine before I add in all this other stuff. The thing is, though, yeah, like you said, decks that are newer are just going to generally be better than decks that are older. There are a few examples of older decks that kind of, like, can sort of still hang, but
for the most part, will highlight.
Yeah, it's going to highlight more of, like, those differences in archetype design and stuff, and so that might be a little annoying, but I still think that on the whole a pure archetypes only challenge could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it would just have, I don't know how you would define what a pure deck is. We've talked about in the pod before where there actually are a few different ways to look at what makes a deck pure. Mm-hmm. Like what does, you know, does adding in these hand traps make my deck impure?
Do I get to add in like Diviner of the Herald?
Yeah, I mean, it's a light fairy.
Like, can Voiceless Voice deck. It's ritual support, but it's not a Voiceless Voice card. So, like, you know, do I get to...
Like, maybe it's pure? Fine because it's not a part of another archetype. But, it's a difficult one. But, I mean... Even then,
it's in the Herald archetype. If you want to get really nitty-gritty nuanced,
I forgot. You know what I mean? It is technically a Herald, isn't it?
No. You can't run it, though. Like, yeah, it's kind of... That might be hard to dictate. But I think that the format could still be pretty fun. Just on the aside, another format I always thought would be really cool would be like the structure deck format. Because we've played with so many of those structure decks. Right. I always find myself thinking those would be a fun one to to do as well.
Okay, but you can only play Cyber Dark.
Never mind. I don't want to do it. okay. So that's one question. There's another one that I really thought was like very cool. Okay. If you were to write your Yu-Gi-Oh card collection into your last will and testament, what would you have done with them?
Burn it with my body.
So like you want your, so you want to be like burned to ashes or whatever. You want to be, what is it most called? Cremated.
Cremation. Yeah.
And you want your cards to be cremated with you?
Yeah. I want them to be mixed in with my ashes.
Okay. Interesting.
But I guess the cards might not even have much of an ash left. They might just completely.
Yeah, they might just go.
So maybe I want my cards cut up through a shredder and then sprinkled into my ashes.
So basically you want to be buried with your cards.
Yes.
I don't know that I would like who I would leave my cards to.
That's why I'm trying to get buried with them.
Like, I mean, I guess if in this universe where I'm like extremely famous or something, it could be cool to like maybe have like a museum or something of like, this is Paul's things he liked museum. But like, generally speaking, I think if I had like, you know, some other relative who was also interested in Yu-Gi-Oh! Of their own volition, then I would leave it to them. But otherwise, I think, yeah, I'm kind of like you. I just, you can bury the cards with me, I guess.
And I do have like an okay-ish reason for burying my cards with me. The vast majority of trading cards that get printed end up in landfills and as litter on the ground. It kind of doesn't even matter what their value is or how much, like, you know, how cool they are. Like, 99% of all trading card games just end up as garbage. So I'm going to take mine with me. Like, just bury me with my cards. If they're going to end up, if statistically speaking, they're going to end up in the trash anyway, bury mine with me.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, like,
my future family might be very confused.
I do think that, like, there could be something to be said about, like, maybe, I have a couple of very rare things, like a DDS Blue Eyes. Like, I might donate that to something. I don't know. Like, to some Yu-Gi-Oh! Museum. Like, if a project like that was happening, I would like to maybe donate to that.
I mean, anything especially expensive, like, if it has, like, real value, we sell it, give it to, like, somebody I care about in my family. Otherwise, bury me with it.
All right, Happy New Year, guys. I've been thinking, we grew up realizing how powerful the God cards were. Do you think there's a way that the God cards could be made truly meta where they would see tournament play?
Okay. I do think it's possible, but they would not be the God cards that we know anymore. I think each God card, you could actually change the wording on all their effects and they become significantly better. But to call them the Egyptian gods would not be accurate anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of rough that the God cards were made into these playable cards at a time when they already, you know, the game's power level was much lower, and even then they were still kind of designed to be quite difficult to use.
It's like three tributes was a lot back then, and
it's also for like four a tribute summon. It's not even like,
yeah, for a tribute summon, which counts as your normal summon. So the very first thing I would do is I go ahead and turn that into a special summon. That's the first step.
That was going to be
that would have made them playable back then.
Yeah,
even today, that's still not good enough, right?
I mean, I think now it depends on, you know, where else we go with these hypothetical effects.
That's what I'm getting at. Like, we got to make more changes.
But I do think that, like, if it's like a special summon, like Tribute 3 special, there's already some inherent playability there. Destiny Hero Plasma is used in Heroes today because it is searchable and because you can get three warm bodies through all of Heroes.
He's a card.
Usual plays, and I didn't just drop him. He has a very meaningful effect. That is a card. So that's another thing that it kind of comes down to is like, okay, what do they do? Like, I think that the baseline stuff that the God cards do actually isn't so bad. Like,
it's just too much of it's spell speed one.
Yeah, a lot of it's spell speed one. I think you have to kind of start making things spell speed two, like Obelisks. Tribute two monsters to nuke your opponent's board. That's a quick effect. That's something pretty scary.
Yeah, and at that point, it's like, ooh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, like suddenly that's like actually pretty good. And maybe it even, you add in that obliterate or the obelisk punch effect or whatever, where like it deals 4,000, whatever. Like, you know, if you make their effects quick effects, then suddenly there's more to that. Maybe like, Raw needs to also be a quick effect, like the
does Cypher's effect trigger on special summon and normal summons, or only normal?
I think it's normal or special, but it's the monster has to be in attack position. So you can always kind of get around it by putting your monster in defense, but in and of itself,
it's I just remove that part and Cypher's like make it special summonable with that by attributing three monsters, and then just remove that whole attack position restriction.
Oh, I think. And their effects probably need to all be like unrespondable, like unreactable. You can't like negate the activation of their effects. I mean, they're
the god cards. They're supposed to be busted. So sure, I'm with that.
Now here's the last issue, though. Unless you had something else to add.
Well, Ra is a whole other beast compared to the other two, I think. Making Ra playable is difficult.
I mean, so here's the problem with Ra. They never, in the baseline effect, they never gave it the whole life point transfer thing.
Yeah, it doesn't have
it. So it would need to have that just to give it attack points. And other than that, I think the whole pay 1,000 to pop a card on the field, just make it a quick effect and you're kind of good.
Oh, I guess so.
Suddenly it's a pretty decent card.
Yeah.
Now here's where like my issue comes in, though. Is so we make these changes to these effects and the gods suddenly become quite playable. Would maybe like kind of anime purists like the idea of this? Because what this does mean now is that your average Snake Eye deck or something
ends on an obelisk,
or we'll even say like Rizeal or whatever. I don't know. They're going to be like teching these in and they're going to kind of be annoying. And you see obelisk once, it's kind of cool. You see it, you know, 100 times and it's just quick effect nuking your board. Like, how would you feel about that sort of a card?
And like, that was kind of what I was getting at with these wouldn't really be the Egyptian gods anymore. The Egyptian god cards have some like reverence to them that you love the nostalgia of them, but they're really bad. Everyone knows this. Good versions of them wouldn't feel like the Egyptian god cards anymore. They'd feel like the parts of Yu-Gi-Oh! That we don't love quite as much.
Yeah, I mean, you could also... One other thing I forgot to add for their effects, probably some protection unaffected by, like, spells, traps, and maybe...
Didn't they already have that?
Obelisk does, and the others don't, actually. Oh, that's right. It's very weird.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, he gets that protection.
They have that protection effects. I'm sorry, they need it.
But yeah, if you load them up with this stuff, it's like, yeah, they'll be pretty good, but they just might be annoying and overplayed. Maybe there's some stipulation where, like, okay, after you special summon them, you can't special summon anymore for the rest of the turn.
Ooh, or better, they should have a clause where you can only summon one divine monster for the entire game.
That would be good. That would help, certainly.
Because there will be some decks that can easily get those three bodies on board, and their whole game plan is just getting, like, the gods on the board over and over again.
Although, even then, like, you probably would only need to... Like, if we're thinking about, okay, Obelisk has this quick effect field nuke.
Right.
You really probably only need to, like, run any given one of them. Like, you wouldn't even need... Like... You can only summon one Divine Beast per duel. Who cares? You summon one, you're probably like, that's enough. It can't be responded to and nukes their board and then like it starts swinging. Like, why would I even need to summon more?
Snake Eye would survive.
So I guess that's kind of the...
If they were full power.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would like... I think that they could totally make them playable, but I just don't know if I would actually
I wouldn't want that. I'm saying right now, I would not want that.
Yeah. Well, anyway... We have one last one. This isn't actually a question. It's just a sort of review of sorts. This is from Basic Nerd.
Okay.
So he says, hey guys, no question today. I just want to say thank you for what you do for the community. You've created a space for engaging, intelligent, and nuanced discussion. Oh, he gives us a lot of credit.
We're intelligent.
While also being funny by just being yourselves, whether it's talking or ranting when necessary about a game we all love or a story about the encroaching dangers of AI, listening to the pod is like sitting around chatting it up with friends in the least parasocial way possible.
Oh, that's right, guys. We're not your friends.
But we are your friends.
We're your online... No, there you go with the parasocial.
All your hard work is truly appreciated and valued. Thank you for being cool and kind people, and I hope you are honestly happy. By now, I wouldn't be surprised if Alec has made a self-deprecating joke, so I'll leave it there. Happy holidays. He was right, actually.
I do not appreciate being read to that degree.
Yeah, I already kind of knew. It's funny, like, literally, like, within that... reading of that, there already had been like a self-deprecating joke man. So he's got you read.
I gotta change up my bag. I
gotta bring some new tricks this year.
You know what, in 2025 we're gonna switch me with Alex, and
yeah, random episodes will have Alex in them now, so like
this will throw people like Basic Nerd off who've gotten too used to my bag of tricks.
That's the new year's resolution. Cool. Well, those are the questions from the pot,
and that brings this episode to a close.
Yeah, first episode of 2025. Absolutely insane.
Like the fact that we're in 2025, still potting, still consistently doing this.
Haven't missed a week. We've been like late some days.
We've been late, but we've always been there.
That is one thing that I will take some pride in. Anyways, just a reminder, we're going to be at Bandai Card Games Fest this weekend. Right. New videos will be starting up again on the main channel pretty soon. Got some cool stuff we're working on. There is a skit we'd like to get out pretty soon. Yep. And other fun stuff. So, yeah.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.